Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we have a very special guest. She's one of my favorite authors right now, and she has a book out in the United States here called The Preacher. Her name is Camilla Lochberg, and she's here to talk about it. Hello.
Hello, hello.
I must ask you, first of all, am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Lochberg. That's how we'll do in the States, Lochberg. In Swedish, it's Lekberg. So it's a little bit more difficult.
It was prettier that way. I like that. I like it. I'm just totally taken with this series. I started with The Preacher. I had to go back and read The Ice Princess to get caught up. But this is a series that has really captured my... I'm sitting here. I've read the first two, and I know there's more that I haven't read. And I'm in like a withdrawal now.
Yeah, I think I'm in Sweden. I'm on my eighth book at the moment. So, but I'm really happy that you like it. It's been very well received in the States, and that's just such a joy for me.
And we should say the Preacher is out from Pegasus Books. It's in all your bookstores right now. It's in hardcover, and you can get The Ice Princess in paperback here in the United States. That's the only two we have here now. Why is it there are eight in Sweden and only two here? Why haven't more been...
Well, the thing is that United States have been a notoriously difficult market for Scandinavian crime before Stieg Larsson. So we kind of held back on publishing the books in the States, and we've focused on the European countries where they've done really, really well. And then Stieg Larsson came along and the door just opened.
Absolutely, and he sort of opened the door for you. And you definitely have a major talent. I mean, just reading these two books, you have a great storytelling ability. Do you know that?
On good days, I know that. On bad days, I think I'm the worst storyteller in the world. But there are more good days than bad now.
But it's so difficult to tell a good story. I mean, I read a lot of crime novels, and some you just can't get into. This series, right away, Patrick and Erica are just, we feel like we know these two characters. Now, where did they come from in your mind? I mean, were you sitting one day and just decided, and they just, you just started thinking about them, or how did they come about?
Well, my first intention was that I wanted to write about, you know, a normal hero, because in Sweden, at least, we've had so many middle-aged police officers that drink too much whiskey, listen to opera or jazz, and have difficult relationships with women. And that has been kind of the stereotype. And I wanted to create something different. So I wanted to have a female, and I wanted her to be like the girl next door. So I created Erica, who's a writer. And, then I kind of realized pretty soon that I do need to have police officers in the book as well. It's difficult to solve crimes without police officers. So a love interest, it was very natural to choose to bring in Patrick as a love interest to Erica.
And that's what's wonderful about The Ice Princess, the love story that develops between them. These suddenly lonely people who are suddenly drawn together. It's fascinating the way you tell that story in the first one, and that's what drives the series, the love between the two of them. I mean, suddenly they're not alone anymore, and then what a great feeling to know in real life when you meet somebody, you first meet somebody, you know you're going to spend the rest of your life with them. What a great feeling.
Yeah, and for them, it's like they were both around 35 in the first book, and they've been through a couple of long relationships that haven't worked out. Patrick's been married once before. And, you know, they just long for that permanent someone in their life. And they want family, they want kids, they want everything surrounding that. And when they meet each other, they're older, they're wiser, and they know what they want, and they know when it's right. And that's so wonderful with their love story, that they kind of know pretty soon that, okay, this is the one.
Now, is Erica anything like you? Are there similarities between Erica? Erica's a very strong woman, even though she I'm sorry.
When I started writing about Erica, I did not want her to be me. I really tried very, very hard to make her different from me, and physical appearance, for one thing. I made her 5 years older, I made her tall, I made her blonde. I'm neither of those things. And I tried to distance myself from her, but when I started writing about her, I realized that I write so much better when I write things that I've experienced myself and have first-hand knowledge about. So I started lending stuff from my life to Erica. So gradually we become more and more alike, and I would say 50% is me and 50% is her own person.
Now, why do you like writing crime novels? I've always wondered why writers write crime novels. I love to read them, but I'm wondering why. What is it about crime novels that draws you in like that? I mean, why not write regular fiction? Why not write other kinds of fiction?
I fell in love with crime stories at a really, really young age. I actually wrote like really horrible stuff already when I was around 4 or 5 years old. So I kind of had it in me from the very beginning. And I also started reading Agatha Christie when I was about 7. And by 11, I had read everything she had written. And I just fell in love with the genre, and I've been in love with it ever since. To me, often I get the question from journalists that when are you going to, especially in Sweden, when are you going to write a real novel? And to me, it's like, why would I want to write anything else but crime novels? It's the best thing there is.
Right. I agree. I love the mystery crime drama. Of course, crime novels and mysteries are so synonymous almost today. I mean, when you have a crime novel, you have some kind of a mystery involved with it. So they're always intertwined. It's that old question, what do you call a thriller? What do you call a mystery? I mean, they're so closely related.
Yeah. In Sweden, we have the same word for it because it's kind of all in the same genre for us. It's just different kinds of within the genre.
Now, you've sold a lot of books in Sweden. The last figure I heard was 5 million. It's probably more than that now. What is it about Sweden? Do they really just love crime stories like this? I mean, is this something they eat up? Or is this unusual for crime novels to sell this well in Sweden?
Well, it's even those figures are kind of unusual, but crime novels are very, very popular in Sweden. And I just lost my headphones here. I'm not quite sure why. Maybe it's because we're a little bit reserved and we're a little bit shy. So maybe it's kind of an outlet for us to read about the darker sides of people and horrific crimes. I'm not quite sure. We have quite a safe society, so maybe it's very exciting for us to read about all the horrible things that goes on around us.
Well, it must be nice when you said you grew up with Agatha Christie, that you can now write your own stories in your own. I mean, you have your own characters. You can tell your own stories. Is it difficult for you to come up with a story idea? I mean, The Preacher starts off with a boy finding bones, finding what turns out to be two dead people. I mean, how do you come up with an idea like that? I mean, does it take a while to come up with the idea, or how does that work?
I usually get the idea for the next book while I'm at the end of the one I'm working on, and it's been like that for all my 8 books. And The Preacher, I get my ideas from, like, all over the place. It could be a picture I get in my head, or in the case of The Preacher, it was actually an American crime case that I saw on Forensic Detectives about teenage boys disappearing in rural America somewhere, and they discovered that it was a man in his 30s who had applied to go to medical school many times, and they never accepted him. But he was very bitter about that because he thought he would be a great doctor. So he kidnapped these teenage boys and he held them prisoner at his house, and he broke their bones, and he, you know, did a cast on them to prove what a great doctor he would have been. And I get very intrigued with that kind of weirdness, because in his mind he didn't do anything wrong. So I started thinking about that, and then I connected it to a religious motive, which is what I have in my book.
Right, which is, I mean, the title itself, The Preacher, you right away you're thinking, what is this book about? I mean, what? It intrigues you before you even open up the story. But the great thing about the book is the way it's written. It's just a very interesting story. I mean, you tell really interesting stories, and these are the kinds of things you can read and just, oh, give me the next one. I can't wait to read the next one.
Thank you.
What do you feel that? I'm sorry.
No, I just love the way I tell my stories is that I tell them through people, and some people think that I've got too many peoples in my book, but I love to have a lot of characters to play with, and I tell the story from their different viewpoints, and that's the way I love to tell a story.
Right, and you do have these chapters that go along with the other chapters where you get to see what the victim was feeling before
yeah.
they died, and it's interesting the way you do that. Chapter 2 starts out in the summer of 1979, and we can go way back and see exactly what happened, and as the book goes along, we gradually get more of an idea of what exactly happened to these people, and you know, who, and then of course at the end we find out who's done it to them, but which is one of the...
Yeah, I've done that with all my books now, because I didn't intentionally add that as a theme or want that as a theme when I started writing crime novels. But by the third book, I realized that, oh, this is the third time that I go back in time to tell a story. So I kind of started realizing that this is probably the way I tell my stories. And the reason for that is because I find it very hard to understand the motives of people if you just look at the present. You always have to go back and see how has this person's life been? How was their childhood? Maybe how was their parents' life and childhood, or even grandparents? So you really have to go back in time to understand people.
Right. Now, you have how many children?
Three.
You have three.
And two bonus children as well.
Did you say two bonus children?
We're a patchwork family. I don't know the word in English, but we call it bonus children. My husband's children from a previous marriage.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's interesting.
Two extras. Yeah.
We would say adopted kids here, I guess, something like that, or adopted into the family. So you have five, really.
Stepkids. Yeah, you probably would say stepkids.
Stepkids, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, where do you get the time to write these books? I mean, with all the kids around and a husband, and I mean, how do you do this? How do you discipline yourself to write these novels? These are not easy to write. They can't be. I mean, this one's 400 pages long. I mean, there are very complex stories. Where do you find the time?
Well, thank God for school and kindergarten, because that's the only hours where I can write, basically. So when I've dropped off the kids at school and kindergarten, then I just have to be very disciplined and get to my computer and stay there until it's time to pick them up again.
Right, so you know exactly what you have to do. Now, do you write a certain number of hours a day, or is it different every day? Or are you a moody writer at all?
No, I look at it as if I'm going to the office, so I don't wait for inspiration or something like that. So I just, you know, when I have the opportunity to write, when I have a full day, when they're at school and kindergarten, then I just have to go to the office and sit and write. And sometimes that produces two pages, sometimes it produces 10, but I have to put in the hours anyway.
It's a long process. I mean, the more I talk to authors, the more I realize how much work is involved in just writing one novel. I mean,
yeah.
I'm amazed. I mean, we have Nora Roberts, who's big over here, who writes two or three novels a year. And how in the world can you write three novels a year?
I don't know. I wouldn't know. It's like climbing Mount Everest. Like, I've just finished my eighth manuscript, and after you've done it, it's like just after you've delivered a baby, it's like, oh no, I'm never doing this again. This is the absolute last time I'm doing this.
Do you always feel that way after every book?
Always. Yeah, I'm so exhausted after every book that I just feel that, oh no, I never want to do this again. But then, you know, I take like 6 months or something where I do other things. And then, you know, the story starts creeping up on me again. And I start longing to sit in front of the computer and tell a story again. But it is scary, because it's like starting a new book is like standing at the foot of Mount Everest and looking up and knowing that, oh no, I have to get up all the way up there.
Right, exactly. But the joy that you bring, I mean, when I read these books, they're so much fun to read. And I can't imagine not being able to read this series on a continual basis. You say you've written 8 now. Now, is there a planned number of books for this series for Erica and Patrick?
No, it's not. In Sweden, it's been very popular among crime writers to say that they're going to write 10. I've never understood why you give a number like that, because I might want to write 9 or 13 or 17 or 53. I don't have a clue. I've just always said that I'm going to keep writing about them as long as I love writing about them and as long as I'm having fun and feel I have something to add to the books.
Now, Patrick and Erica, I've only read 2. Keep in mind, I've only read 2 of the books. I feel such a sense of I'm so far behind. But anyway, are there a lot of things that I still don't know about Patrick and Erica at this point?
Yeah, there's a lot that's going to happen in their lives, and I do have a lot of readers that read the books basically to see what happens with Eric and Patrick, and even for myself, over the years, I've been writing about them for 10 years now, so they've become like my best friends, my best pretend friends, and I spend more time with them than I do with my own family, basically, so that's no wonder, and I have to keep writing about them to see what happens to them, because I only know one book ahead what's going to happen.
Right. Now, the one you just now finished in the last week, what is that one going to be called?
It's going to be called The Angel Maker.
The Angel Maker. Now, the one before that was about a lighthouse, right?
Yeah, Lighthouse Keeper.
That's the one I'm really in. I love that title. I don't know. You know how you look at a title and you think, oh, that just sounds perfect. I can't wait. And, of course, there's one called The Gallows Bird coming up. That's interesting.
Yeah.
What exactly is a gallows bird, anyway? I'm curious.
It's just a word in Sweden that is someone that just brings unluck with them, you know, the kind of person that whenever they're with you, something bad's going to happen.
Right.
You know, some like you say in America, some people don't have any luck.
Right. Unlucky, yeah.
Bad things just, they're just unlucky. Things just don't go their way.
Right. Do you consider, well, you're absolutely, well, you've been lucky. Look at you. I mean, you've written your 8th book, you finished your 8th book, and who knows, the sky's the limit for you. Do you have a goal? Is there a goal, or is it just to make every book better than the one before it?
Yeah, I basically work like that, but I want to do even better by every book. But then I do, I see myself as a businesswoman as well, so I do. I used to be in marketing, so I work a lot with that part of my job as well, which is not always very accepted in the cultural circles, where being a writer is supposed to be a calling and not the job. But to me, it's a job that I love, which I know people appreciate. But to me, there's always also a lot of stuff around to handle. And I do other things. I've done 2 cookbooks. I've just released my first children's book. So
cool.
I do other things too. Yeah, I do. I need to do other things to get out of my comfort zone, because even though every crime novel of mine, it's still a lot of work, I'm in my comfort zone now when I write them. And to keep me on my toes, I need to do other stuff as well.
Right, absolutely. I mean, I think life is much more interesting when you branch out and do other things. I mean, doing the same thing every day can become very tedious. It doesn't even matter what it is. It can still become...
Yeah, even if it's fun. I mean, riding a roller coaster every day would get really boring, even if you love it.
You seem to know exactly what you want to do. Do you ever have... Has any of the 8 ever been... you were writing it and just didn't know where to go? I mean, does that happen a lot, or does that just happen every once in a while where you get stuck in a certain part of the book? Or does that ever happen?
More certain parts. Yeah, it happens with a certain parts. And what I've learned to do, because I used to really freak out about that with the earlier books, I was like, okay, I'm done. I have no more words left. I don't have any more story in me. I'm going to have to go back to my cubicle and work there for the rest of my life as an economist, and my life is over. That kind of freak attacks. But now I kind of relax into it and just accept that, okay, I have to take a week off or something and just let the story evolve for a little while. And then it usually solves itself.
Did you have trouble coming back to it after that? Or, I mean, or remembering where you left off? Does that ever become a problem, or is it always clear in your head?
What I usually do is I go back and read, like, the last 10 pages, so I get into the story again. Or I read, or I take a couple of days off and just read the whole manuscript just to get the feel for the whole story, and then I can keep writing.
Now, these are in Sweden. Now, where you live right now, what's the population? What town do you live in?
I live in Stockholm.
In Stockholm, okay.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure how many people live in Stockholm, actually, but it's the capital, it's the biggest city in Sweden.
Is there something about Sweden that makes a writer so prolific like you? I mean, is there something there? Is there an atmosphere there that you like that's good for writing?
We often joke about the long, dark nights, but it does help. I mean, we read a lot of books in Sweden because of the long, dark nights, and reading really helps you in writing and inspires you for writing. So I think that has to do with it. And also, I do believe that we have such a great crime writing tradition in Sweden. And success, just breeds success. So I think that is also an important factor.
Now, do you do a lot of book signings in Sweden for your books? And what kind of a crowd do you get?
Yeah, I do a lot of book signings, and on a typical book signing, I would probably sign for, a couple of hundred books, stuff like that.
Right. So you
my record is 1,000 books in one day. I could hardly use my hand after that evening.
1,000 in one day? I can't imagine what
was my record.
I can't imagine what your hand felt like after that. After you were done.
I had to put it on ice. It was like a claw. I couldn't move it. It was great fun.
Well, you seem like you have a lot of fun doing everything, and that it's great to hear. I mean, that you enjoy writing these books as much as we enjoy reading them. And, you know, where is the story going? What's going to happen next? And, of course, that's what drives you to keep reading a book. But the thing with a crime novel is it's got to be interesting, and it's got to make sense. So do you work on your endings a lot? Do you agonize over endings?
I work on my endings a lot, and I work on not leaving stuff behind that I haven't explained. I hate loose ends, and I think you're cheating the reader if you leave loose ends. And the typical great ending is when you kind of fool the reader the whole way through the book, but you do leave clues. So when everything is revealed, you go like, Oh, that's right. Oh, you know, like when you saw the movie Sixth Sense and everything suddenly made sense.
Exactly.
That's the kind of feeling when you want to give to your reader. And you want to make your reader feel smart because you want your reader to be able to guess at least some of it.
You have a great translator for the United States. The guy who does your translation, Stephen Murray, who apparently has also done Stieg Larsson.
Yeah, and he's absolutely fantastic. He does the UK editions as well.
Now, which leads me to the question, how many different countries are your books published in?
I think the latest count is 35.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Now, there's also, from what I read on the internet now, of course you can tell me because you know, are they making a TV show in Sweden of the series?
Well, they've actually already made and broadcast the four first on TV, but now they're making a much bigger production out of it. We're doing 10 episodes that are especially written for TV, and then we're doing 2 cinema movies based on 2 of the books, number 5 and we think maybe number 8. We're not quite sure, but number 5 definitely.
Now, what are we going to see in the United States? Anything? Are any of those going to be brought over here, do you think?
Well, we're doing it as a big international production. I was just in Cannes the other week and did a lot of interviews and met foreign distributors, and we had huge interest. So I do think it's going to make its way to the U.S., and maybe someone would want to do an English version of it, English-speaking version of it. We'll have to see about that.
I hope so, because I'm looking forward. When I read about it, I'm like, oh, man, I'd love to see this on a TV. I can only imagine. We have a program here called Masterpiece Theater where they show a lot of mystery programs. Like they just did, last year, they just did Wallander,
Yeah, all they're great.
Kurt Wallander, and there's so much, and they always do such a fabulous job. I mean, the storytelling, the acting, they get the perfect actors to do these roles. It's just amazing. Now, you've actually, of course, met the people that play Patrick and Erica. Are they what you envisioned?
Yeah, they are. They're going to be absolutely perfect. And the strange thing is that I only know one actor in Sweden. His name is Richard, and he's my husband's stepbrother. Oh. He also gets the part as Patrick, and I didn't have anything to do with it. So when they phoned me up and said Richard was playing Patrick, I was like, oh, no, you're kidding me. But he's like the next big star in Sweden, and he's going to be absolutely fantastic. And the girl as well, Claudia, she's perfect as Erica.
From beginning to end, now let's take the book you just finished. How long did that take you from beginning to end? You do a lot of drafts, and how long from the very beginning to finishing up are we talking about? Does it take a year?
Yeah, I would say a year, from when I write the first word until I write the last one. But there are breaks in between because I have to go to tours or things like that abroad. I was on a U.S. tour for 2 weeks, for example, this spring. And from beginning to end, about a year.
Yeah, and then you think about that, a year to write a book. I mean, to us it seems like, well, that's normal for an author, but it's a long time when you think about spending that much time on one book.
It's a lot of hours that goes into it, which sometimes, sometimes people who haven't written books don't see that. And that always annoys me a little bit when you're interviewed and they say, like, oh, well, I've thought about writing a book as well, and how hard can it be? I'll do that someday. And you're like, how hard can it be?
Right.
Okay, you try, and you'll see how hard it is, because people don't sometimes really understand how much work that goes into a book.
How much does your editor help you? I mean, is it
I work quite independently when I write my manuscript. So I write the whole thing through myself, without any discussion whatsoever with my editor, and without any discussion with anyone actually apart from the research I do. But when the manuscript is finished, I hand it over and said, "Knock yourself out and give me all the criticism you've got."
Right.
And then we work with it.
Is that was that difficult for you at first to do that? To have somebody just tell you exactly what they thought was wrong or was right about it? I mean, but you know what you're doing, obviously. There's no doubt in my mind you've got a major talent. So I don't think that's not an issue. But is that difficult to have somebody tell you that?
At first it was, because the books, they're my babies. It's like someone walking up to you and saying that, oh, your baby would be really pretty if they only did something about the ears.
Right.
It's the exact same feeling. But through, experience now, and I've been working with the same editor for all the books, I've kind of been able to let go of my ego in that way and accept the fact that she's got, great stuff that she can bring to the book, and I rarely argue with her over the points that she makes on the manuscript. Sometimes it's even like you've felt when you've been writing it that, oh, this character is a little weak, but hopefully no one will notice.
Right.
But of course, my editor always does.
Right. Now, you're one of the prettiest writers I've ever seen, crime writers. I mean, I looked at your picture and I'm like, wow,
thank
she's
you.
Beautiful. She could be an actor. You could be an actress yourself. Have you ever thought about that?
I'm like the worst actress ever. I couldn't deliver a line for the life of me. But I made them give me a cameo when they did the TV series, and I'm making them give me one now as well, do a Hitchcock. Because I think it's kind of fun. But I've told them explicitly that please don't give me any lines to say, because I just can't.
Right.
that would take us like 3 days of production time.
Now, do you get recognized on the streets of Stockholm? Do people come up and say, I know you, I've seen your pictures in books? Do they do that sometimes?
Yeah, they do. They recognize me quite a lot.
What is that like?
It's weird, but you kind of get used to it. But also, Swedes are quite quite shy. It's not that often. You just hear the whispers, and they you know, they kind of give each other the nod and say, like, hey, look who passed us. But they don't often come up to it, but come up to us. But it's a bigger thing when, because my husband is quite well known in Sweden as well. He was the first winner of Survivor, the show Survivor.
Oh, really?
And so, yeah, so he's a police officer, by the way, which is quite funny. Life imitates art.
Now, what's his name?
His name is Martin. Martin Mellon.
Oh, okay.
And so it's when it's the two of us together, it's a bigger thing than if it's just me or just him.
What does he think of your book? Obviously, does he get to read them before they come out?
Yeah, he does. He gets to read the manuscript after my editor has read it. Then it's his turn. And, of course, I ask him a lot of police questions as I'm writing it. So it's I have a lot of friends in the Swedish crime writing community, especially among the girls. And they think I'm on steroids because I have my own policeman. They think it's unfair competition.
Now, did you ever meet Stieg Larsson before he died?
No, I never did. I know people who knew him, but I've never met him myself. But they tell me he was the nicest man you could ever meet.
He does seem that way, doesn't he? I did interview another Swedish author named James Thompson within the last year. I like his books too. It's funny because when we talked on the phone, it was a little harder to hear him. He must have been farther out in Sweden because the connection wasn't really that good. Do you read other Swedish authors, and what do you think?
I read a lot of Swedish crime, and I, as I said before, I think we have a great tradition in Sweden. We have great crime writers, so I've always read a lot of the other Swedish writers.
Right. Is there any kind of competition, do you feel, when you read them, do you think, wow, I wish I'd thought of that idea? Does that ever happen, or is there pretty much a helping thing with, I mean, I know in America here, writers are very helpful to other writers. Is it the same way in Sweden?
It's the same way in Sweden. Albeit I would say that probably for many years it was a very male-dominated area with the crime writing. Mm-hmm. But after that, the women have kind of entered the scene and a little bit even taken over. And I did say that the men sometimes have a little bit of difficulty handling that. But that's the exceptions. Most of the time we have a great community and we really help each other out and support each other.
Right. You know, I think of your books, when I read your books, I kind of think of Elizabeth George a lot because of the psychological aspects of your books. There's a lot of...
One of my favorites.
Really? The psychological stuff in her books and in your books is really, to me, what makes the books fun to read. I mean, why do people do the things they do? What motivates somebody to kill? What motivates somebody to act the way they do? And that's what I love. That's another aspect of your books that I just love, that feeling of why is Patrick doing that? Why is Erica? And I mean, we get to, of course, meet Erica's sister, who has all kinds of problems, who seems like one of those people who's just unlucky.
Yeah, she is, and then it's also intriguing to write like a character like Anna. For me personally, I've never been exposed to abuse in any way or in any relationship, and you know, it's hard to understand that. How can you stay with someone that abuses you? And to an author, that's the challenge that you have to. When I describe Anna, I really have to put my own naive beliefs aside and really have to put myself in her shoes and try to understand why is she staying with this guy.
Right.
And that's the fun part of writing for me, because I get to be Anna, who's an abused woman. I get to be an 80-year-old man. I get to be a 12-year-old boy. I could be all those characters in one day.
Exactly. And that's the thing. When you haven't experienced it yourself, how do you write about it? How do you write about abused characters when you've never experienced that? I mean, do you do a lot of research in that area? Do you talk to people that have been abused?
Yeah, I do. I do a lot of research because I also love doing research and really getting into areas that I didn't know anything about. I've had, in a third book, I have a theme of autism, and I had to do, like, tons of research to try and understand that. And fifth book, I have World War II, and I had to do a lot of research about that. And that kind of brings me into areas I would never have known anything about otherwise.
Right. Now, the fifth book, is that The Stolen Child?
The German Child, yeah, or The Stolen Child. I'm not quite sure of the translations of the titles, but in Swedish, it's The German Child.
Right. I love it. Of course, I'm going to be reading these books at some point. If they come out in the United States, they're very slow coming out in the United States. Too slow for me, anyway. But when you love a series, you can't wait for the next one. And people come to the store. I work at a bookstore, and actually, your book is one that I've been selling lately, The Ice Princess, and now
okay.
I sold a copy of The Preacher yesterday. But, you know, Your series is one where you just can't stop reading it. It's this constant feeling of, I got to see what they're up to now, what's going to happen next, and so it's very
hard. Well, you should see that. Yeah, you should see that. I've got some cliffhangers in the ending of some of the books. My readers almost wanted to kill me here in Sweden.
Which book did you start with the cliffhangers? The first two didn't really have any cliffhangers, but
no, I think it's the fourth one where I really went sadistical on my readers.
Now, that's the one called The Gallows Bird, I think we were discussing
that
earlier.
If I remember correctly, that's the one where I'm really cruel to my readers.
Why did you do that? I mean, what made you do? And I actually like cliffhangers. I think it makes me want to read the next book, so I think it's good.
Yeah, I thought it was, you know, fun to end it like really with a really, really big cliffhanger and just let my readers hang there for a year before the next book came out. And I got so many emails from readers saying that, oh, please, couldn't you just tell me what's going to happen? And I love that.
Right. You love keeping them on the hook like that.
Yeah, I love. It's a little bit sadistical, but you know.
As a writer, you have a lot of right. As a writer, you have a lot of power over the audience. You're telling the story. You can tell what you want. You can make whoever you want the villain. And even though it's got to sound really good. It's got to make perfect sense. But is that fun for you? Do you ever have mornings where you go up and think to yourself, boy, I'm really a special person. I really know what I'm doing. Does that ever happen?
Not quite in that way. But you do, when you sit and you do feel a little bit like a puppeteer when you sit and write these books, because you can decide everything. And that's a very thrilling feeling. It's a little bit like you're playing God in front of the computer, because you're making these people do everything. But after a while, you kind of forget that the characters take over. I know that's a cliche that authors often use, that when they say that, well, my characters came alive and they just took over. But it does work that way. They do take over.
Yeah. They pretty much have to, because you have to be thinking about them all the time when you're writing the book.
Yeah. And it's like, how would he react in that situation, or how would she react in that situation? And if he says that, how would she, with her psychology, answer to that? And you have to have a really good feeling for the characters to be able to predict how they will react.
And also, do you find is there sometimes a temptation to use the same phrases over and over again in your books? Do you have problems with that? I mean, something that you've used in one book, you suddenly think, oh, wait, I used that in an early book. I can't use that. Do you have problems with that sometimes?
Yes. Oh, I have my darlings that keep popping up all the time, so that's one of the most important things for my editor to work with. She laughs by now. She says, like, oh, I found 15 of these in this book. That's better than last book when it was 23. And so I do have certain ways of expressing things that I use over and over, but that's something an editor could help you with. Kill your darlings. That's a very good recipe for writing.
It's interesting you say that. I've often wondered that. I mean, there are authors that I read that they make it look flawless. You read every book, and you're like, every book is different. And that's so hard. I mean, there are also authors where every book reminds you of another book.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
In a series, should one book ever remind you of another one, or each one should be unusual? Don't you want each one to be different?
Different but the same. It's like to me, it's like when I write a series and when you read a series, you do want recognition. You want to sit down and read about the same type of book as the last one was in the series, but you have to add something new as well. It has to move forward, but I don't think you can move it too much forward. I mean, it's like when you go to IHOP to get pancakes. You don't want them to be different every time. You want them to be the same.
Right.
And it's a little bit the same, I think. Some of my cultural friends would kill me for comparing to IHOP, but it's people want recognition. They want to feel safe. They want, when I buy an Elizabeth George book, I want the special characters of an Elizabeth George book.
Right. Have you ever met Elizabeth George?
No, I still have to. I haven't met her yet, but hopefully I'll run. I've met some of my other like author heroes, and it's always a huge treat to get to meet these people. But Elizabeth George, I still haven't met.
As a writer, do you ever think about retiring? Do you ever think about, well, I've done enough, and I can't. It's too much. I mean, obviously, you mentioned that earlier about it. Sometimes feeling that way when you're writing a book. But seriously, do you ever think about retiring? Do you ever think about not telling any more stories?
Well, after every finished manuscript, I always think of retiring and just taking care of my flowers on the veranda.
Right.
But after about, you know, 6 months of not writing, I've got tons of other stuff to do. So it's not like I'm just laying in the hammock and reading for 6 months, but after about 6 months, it's really, I'm getting the itch again that I want to write and I want to tell a story. So I'm not sure I could retire even if I wanted to, because I just love telling stories, and it's what I do.
Right, and it's what we love. I mean, absolutely. And it's like Stephen King. He was going to retire, but look, he hasn't retired now. He's still writing books, and of course, and his new one is like 1,000 pages long, and it's like he's never going to retire.
No, it's because we're doing what we love. I mean, it's our hobby that we can live on and work with, and I think that is such a dream come true. So, no, I don't think I'll ever retire either. I'd get too bored. I'd be bored out of my mind.
Right. What would you do with yourself? You know, the joys in life are writing. And then
I'd probably get like 23 cats or something and just, you know, watch Oprah all day. So it wouldn't be a pretty sight.
It's funny you mentioned Oprah. Her last show is airing today, actually, on TV.
Oh, okay.
And
no, I'm an Oprah fan, so.
Are you? Well, me yeah. too. I think she's a little over the top sometimes, but I enjoy what she does to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But so you do lay in the hammock a lot and read?
Not when I have a very intense writing time. When I write a lot, then I can't really read. But when I'm in between real intense writing, then I love reading books.
Now, you just finished number 8. Now, between the first book you wrote and the 8th book, has it gotten a lot easier to tell the story, or is it still every time a very difficult task?
It's still a very, very difficult task. But I think the biggest, you know, step forward was actually between book one and book two, because when I wrote book one, I didn't know I had an audience. I didn't know if anyone would want to read what I wrote. And from book two and onward, I've known that I have an audience. I've known that, well, I can write, which I didn't know with the first one. So it's still difficult, but from book two, I do have a feeling of confidence that I can do this.
Right. So the confidence level's gone up, but you still have, as a writer, it seems like every writer I've ever talked to has doubts. All writers, even though some of them don't act like they do, there's got to be doubt sometimes. You know, can I tell this whole story? Can I finish this book? Will the reader be interested in my books anymore?
Of course. I mean, and that is a doubt that keeps you on your toes as a writer. The day that you're so content and so full of yourself with your own writing and think that, oh, I just write these perfect books, then is the time to retire, because it's a doubt that really keeps you pushing forward. So you need that doubt.
Right. Do you believe that anybody could write if they really wanted to?
No.
Or do you think?
Because it's a talent, the same way as drawing is a talent. I wouldn't be able. I could go to art school for like the next 20 years, and I still wouldn't be able to draw anything, you know, resembling something nice. So I don't have it in me. And it's the same with people and writing, that there are a lot of people who don't have it in them, but you can always be better. I could probably learn to draw better than I do now, but you do have to have some talent to start with.
Right.
Then you can evolve from there.
Determination is a big thing, though. I mean, when you set out and determine to do something, a lot of times you can do it. It's just a question of how well it's going to turn out. I mean, could I be a Major League Baseball player if I wanted to be? No, because it's just not in me. I'm not athletically inclined. But do you think sometimes we just tell ourselves that, and that there is some kind of ability there that we don't know about?
Well, it's like we have the Idol television show here as
right.
well. So we have Swedish Idol instead of American Idol. And you're just amazed at how many people turn up that can't sing. But
right.
they think they can sing because their parents have been telling them all their life that, you're going to be a star, and you sing so well, and you're going to be a huge star. And it's like, okay. Wake up call, because it's not true, and a lot of parents do that. They tell their kids that, oh, you're so great at this, and you can succeed at whatever you want to do. That's not true. You have to find something that you're good at, and then work on it.
Right, and you have to find that inner thing that everybody has. Everybody has some kind of a talent.
Yeah,
and
everybody has something.
What gets to me is people that have the talent and won't admit that they have it. They seem to be
yeah.
held back by either by self-loathing or whatever it is. You know, they just don't have the
yeah.
ability to overcome that lack of confidence. But you've actually,
yeah.
you must have a lot of confidence writing, because you're very good at what you do. I mean, this is definitely something you are very skilled in, and just reading The Ice Princess, I knew it right away. And I knew, I mean,
I do have good confidence when it comes to my writing. Do I think it's perfect? No. Hopefully I will be able to keep working on it for the rest of my life and keep improving and improving. But I do believe I have a talent of telling a story. And to me, it's just a joy that I've been given the opportunity to actually work with it.
Now,
a lot of people dream about it.
Now, I think in August, your next book comes out in Sweden, is that correct? And then what number
yeah.
is that?
It's the eighth one.
That's the eighth one that comes out in Sweden in August?
Yeah, it's number eight. September, it's coming out in September.
Oh, it's September, okay. And that'll be The Angel Maker?
Yeah, that's The Angel Maker.
So the first seven are already, I wasn't aware of this, but the first seven are already out in Sweden.
Yeah, they're all out. The seventh one came out about a year ago.
I want to come over to Sweden just to get all the books and just come back with them all, and so I can read them all. And I feel like I'm in such withdrawal. I feel like I'm on, like, weaning my way off drugs, since I can't get enough of this series.
I should take a crash course in Swedish then.
Yeah, but literally, I already ordered the third one from, I found it online, but I can't wait to read.
You have to let me know if you liked it.
Right. Oh, definitely. I can't wait to read 4 to 7, too. I mean, and hearing you describe...
The third one is one of my favorites, actually.
Oh, really? So
yeah.
That's The Stonecutter, in case anybody's
yeah.
wondering what the third one's called, The Stonecutter. So we want all the audience to know that all these books. And, it's such a joy, and I'm going to work now in a few minutes, and I'll be selling your book again. Of course, we will be getting War of the Ice Princess, and I think I sold out of it. I sold us out of it the other day. But it's got such a beautiful paperback cover with the crystals on the cover.
Wonderful. It's really great.
But now, when do you start book nine?
Well, since you asked me now, I'm never going to write a book again in my entire life, and I'm going to retire and sit on the porch and just take care of my flowers. But right. If you ask me in 6 months, I'll probably have started working on it.
Right, in 6 months. So somewhere along the line, your confidence will come back. Your confidence is there.
Yeah.
I know you.
I'm going to.
There are people out there thinking, oh, I wonder if she really will quit. Maybe this is it. Maybe this is it. What are your favorite flowers, by the way?
Roses. Pink roses.
Pink roses.
Yeah, my husband doesn't buy me enough of them.
But he will after he hears this.
It's a work in progress. Yeah, it's a work in progress.
That's great. But, I mean, I'm sure he'll come around.
Yeah, I hope so. But, you know, he's a cop, so it's more, you know, bringing home the donuts thing.
Right. Well, somewhere, I'm going to get a signed book from you, I hope. So,
I'm sure we'll arrange for that.
That would be great. Now, the email address I sent to you, you get my emails okay, right? I'd love to keep in contact with you. This has been a wonderful experience for me to talk to you, because The Preacher is such a great book. Of course, it's out in the United States, and we can look forward to 6 and someday 7 more of these books.
Yeah.
And that's great.
I'll keep working on them.
And we've been talking the whole time to Camilla Lackberg, author of The Preacher, and you can get it in all your bookstores from Pegasus Books, and look for The Ice Princess in paperback. It's been a joy and a delight. Thank you so much.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you. And this has been David's Book Talk. We'll talk to you next time.